You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know who I am, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer and consultant in the sector, and more recently published author on influencer marketing strategy. In this podcast series, you're going to hear me interview all sorts of people from the world of influencer marketing. But before we start, as always, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast series just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. So today I'm talking with the founder of 3blackdot.com, Reggie Cash. Now, 3blackdot.com is an influencer-driven digital studio focused on the intersection of gaming and lifestyle. They're virtually integrated to conceive and produce digital content, merch, events, films, games, and books. And they partner with digital influencers to drive massive audiences to engage with both established and startup brands. As gaming specialists, Reggie also talks about some of the great creators in the space and why they've been so successful.
3 Black Dot is an entertainment company. What we really focus on, how do we create experiences and content that really speak to the heart of the modern gamer? And so we've put together what I would say is sort of a future studio model, but it's certainly a very kind of unique infrastructure where we bring a lot of creative resources to the creator economy to produce original films, series, books, clothing, merchandise, which sort of all at the core kind of wraps around connecting very deeply to a digital community and connecting that community to IP and experiences that resonate. And I think that's where the influencer bit comes in.
Gaming has just grown hugely, hasn't it, over the last year or so? And why particularly esports? Why has there been this growth in this market, other than perhaps just the pandemic? What particularly have you been noticing?
The biggest thing I think that's fueling the growth is just the generational shift in attitudes around gaming. And so, you know, if we were to give some context to this, gaming now is probably a $130 billion industry. It's the largest sort of form of media entertainment in the world. The esports piece of it that you touched on is fastly growing, but it's still only 1-2% of that overall pie. But to answer your question specifically, it's the attitudinal shift that we've seen amongst especially Gen Z and millennials, where gaming is their predominant form of entertainment. There was a recent study that really caught my attention because I was even shocked, even someone who understands how quickly this is growing. I was shocked by the numbers that showed 26% of Gen Z and millennials say that gaming is their preferred form of entertainment. Movies and television, only 10%. And so really, this is where the audience has gone. And I think there's lots of different reasons for that. But, you know, they've spoken loudly that if you don't understand gaming, you don't understand the sort of attitudes and the profiles that are being shaped and influenced by this form of entertainment, you're really missing out on a very sort of large piece of the market and addressable audience.
When you said generational thing, I mean, sometimes when we think about gamers, we think of slightly nerd-orientated people that just never leave their darkened rooms and play on these gaming wheels and everything else.
Right.
Actually, dare I say, I play Candy Crush every day. That's a game, isn't it? I mean, what do we define as gaming? How broad is it? Because everybody now is, particularly during the pandemic, is playing some form of game.
Yeah, you know, that's the sort of advent of this casual gamer is really a big part of the growth. And the way we tend to look at these things is on the spectrum of who would sort of define themselves as a gamer versus who would say, yeah, I play games occasionally. That's the continuum within that. There's lots of different profiles that sort of reveal very interesting kind of consumer behavior patterns and choices that allows you to then get into a conversation about reaching that audience and influence and marketing and conversion and sort of that whole spectrum. You know, we have to make sure that we're sort of teasing it out as esports at the core extreme and, you know, someone who is gaming with the intent of really skilling up and being top 1% at that game, all the way to the Candy Crush and people who are just sort of putting it on their phone and playing casually and intermittently.
But I guess it's a good point that you made there, because the casual gamer could get excited by the thrill of the competition and the aspirational, and then of course move into into other forms of more serious gaming, which of course is an interesting trend.
Yeah, it is. What we like to do is we sort of flip it on its head, where gaming to us just sits at a tier that's similar to TV and movies. It doesn't really tell you anything because it's that broad. It really is reached and penetrated sort of the zeitgeist in that broad of a manner. And so what we like to do is to look at those consumer profiles and those behaviors and really start to understand why people are playing the game. And you touched on a very interesting point, which goes back to your first question of what's fueling the growth. For Gen Z and millennials, when we start to sort of dig into those profiles, a lot of it really is about community building. A lot of it, sometimes it's aspirational, sometimes it's a point of connectivity, sometimes it's a point of socialization, sometimes it's a sense of accomplishment. And so from an influence standpoint, you really need to dig in and try to understand kind of why that community is showing up there. That's really the key at you sort of unlocking the sort of way in if you're an outsider trying to understand what this audience is doing and how to reach them if they're not turning on the television anymore.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to campaigns then, influencer marketing campaigns, what sort of the standout things that you've been noticing?
For us, it's always about how can you create things that have meaning and have impact? You can spend an enormous amount of money in digital marketing and create these sort of short-term blips and lots of reach, but don't necessarily do anything to move the needle towards affinity and resonance with a specific brand. And so what we do and what we think is really important, the sort of full stack of that entry is having a really, really good content experience. And so we try to wrap most of our campaigns into deep storytelling and ideally a piece of IP that will gather persistent audience. And so a great example of this is a show that we did recently called Alpha Betas. And we tapped four massive gaming influencers who were predominantly on YouTube, but collectively they had over 40, 45 million subscribers. And we partnered with Starburns, who is the studio behind Rick and Morty. And we created a completely new animated series. This was an entertainment experience that was crafted to specifically be geared towards the sentiment of the communities that these four massive influencers have been really programming to over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. What makes this interesting is we took a very sort of US heritage brand called Fruit of the Loom, has been around for probably 100 years.
I know it very well.
And, you know, if you're of a certain age through marketing, you know, there's Fruit of the Loom and there's Hanes and the major briefs, right? That brand didn't have a deep resonance within the gaming community, especially these Gen Z millennial audiences. And we really sat and worked with them on a campaign of how to integrate them into Alpha Betas and integrate them into the storytelling that would really allow them to show up in an authentic way as being an outsider to this community. And they gave us license, thankfully, and they sort of listened to us to say, you know, this community, there's a little bit of self-deprivation in this community. The Alpha Betas community isn't about bragging about how good you are and how great you are. You have to be willing to make fun of yourself. And they allowed us to draw our characters in using Haynes briefs as a parachute and parachuting down from the sky. They allowed us to do fun skits, fun kind of animated skits and drawn skits of your briefs being exposed at an airport check-in. But in allowing us to sort of really weave them into the storytelling and weave them into the emotional connectivity of the audience, the reception that they got was phenomenal. People were saying, this is going to move Fruit of the Loom stock. Like, I can't wait to go out and buy my Fruit of the Loom. It's because they haven't necessarily seen brands come in as a part of the joke. That was a part of the experience that we were able to craft for them by virtue of, you know, not just understanding who the influencers are, but really understanding why people are showing up and why they're participating in that community.
That's really interesting, because I'm guessing that you're having to bring the brand with you, and they've got to trust you, haven't they? Because there's so many big corporate organizations that know they should be doing something in influencer marketing, but are that brand safety is they're on the touchline, aren't they? And that they need to. But I love brands that do embrace this, and actually they let people run with it in a creative way, because it can break down that sort of stiff corporate imagery, isn't it? Sounds like you did a great job there.
Yeah, it's always fun when you get a partner that understands it a little bit. It does take a great deal of trust, because the first point of understanding is, hey, you understand this audience better than we do. We're going to like lean in on that. For us as a studio that's putting together some of these content experiences, we have to then sort of show the same trust to our creative partners, who are the influencers, and say, hey, you know this audience better than we do. Here are some of the brand guidelines. Tell us how you would feel most comfortable introducing this brand to your audience. And so it continues to go down the line. Everything in the digital space, is one characteristic of it is you just can't control it. A lot of it, you get that instantaneous feedback. And if you're a brand and you're saying, that's what I want those likes, I want that engagement, I want to know that when I posted something or I showed up somewhere that it wasn't met with crickets, that people were really engaged with it and they responded. You can't control that. And so by virtue of, you know, making that statement and making that claim or that aspiration, you have to understand that, you know, sometimes it goes both ways. And the goal is never 100%. You're never going to, you know, no one's going to be 100% happy with that. But in the instantaneous feedback, you certainly want a good ratio of 80% being happy with it amongst, you know, sort of 20% of people who are, you know, sort of trolls, and they weren't going to like it no matter what.
Yeah, but it's all feedback, isn't it? And it's understanding, it's being able to understand what your audience is saying. And what I loved about what you said, which I think is really important, is where content creators aren't just told what to do, but they're actually involved in the brief. Because I know from having spoken to many content creators over the years, they don't want to be the last thing in the food chain. You know, they don't want to be the amplifier. You know, there's a reason why the word creator is involved in their title, is so that they can be, you know, engaged in it. And I think so often you see brands look at the campaigns when they're finished and thinking, wow, we would never have gone in that direction. That's sort of blown us away. And that's what's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an incredible experience when people come in with the right intention and it goes really well. You know, one of the things that we educate our partners on is these creators, they didn't wake up and say, oh, you know, I want to be an influencer, right? Sometimes that's the case when you're looking at different mediums, but for the most part, especially when you're looking at sort of longer form content, they've shown up and they said, you know, I have a story to tell. And I think if I tell this story consistently enough, people will engage with me on the basis of me providing them an entertainment experience. If you're thinking about this just as like a dumb machine, you know, you input something and then it spits out a list of people, and then you allocate a spend across that list of people. And on the output, you get some creative assets. You can accomplish some goals that way. But I imagine that it's not the goals that you really aspire to, which is building resonance or building affinity amongst a community who may not have otherwise been interested in your product. And so in partnership, and we really stress partnership with the brands that we work with, is think of these creators as your partner as well, and allow them to really express the agency, because they're going to know this audience better than anyone. they've been able to day in and day out, and the frequency is amazing, but they've been able to day in and day out show up in front of this group of people in a very intimate way. And there's like a scoreboard that measures it every single day. So you can see if the type of effect and impact that they're having and how consistently people are showing up for them. Once they've been able to do that, they've earned the right to sort of trust them a little bit more than just be at the end of some machine where you're pressing a button and spitting out something.
And they want the campaigns to work, don't they? That's the thing. And it's, you know, it's if it falls flat for the brand, it falls flat for the content creator. And, you know, that's really important.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the best campaigns are when the creator understands the why of the brand. And so the more a brand can invest in bringing them over the wall and saying, like, here's why we find your audience valuable. And here's what we're really about. And here's how we think our product actually completes the experience that you've been building. Creators love that, and they can help ideate, and they can sort of be a part of the conversation in that way. That's super important. I think anyone who is missing that step and just reducing everything to a set of numbers, you're sort of really only getting a fraction of the impact that you could be receiving.
Absolutely. So on the basis that we've been talking about content creators, who are some of the ones that are a shining light for you, and perhaps why?
The creators that we work with the most, we have a foundation in gaming. And I think when we look at the sort of consistency of some of the gaming creators that we work with, such as these names may not be sort of household names, but creators like Slogo Man and Thanos Gaming and Basically I Do Work and Syndicate and Wildcat, these are creators that have a certain almost directorial quality about them, and that they understand why people are showing up for them. And they really gear their content towards that in a very, very sort of professional, almost theatrical way. So nothing's haphazard. They have very, very specific point of views, and they sort of reinforce those character traits to their audience so that the audience, they're sort of never disappointed from like an emotional resonance standpoint. And so what I mean by that, if you have an audience that's showing up for comedic effect, so this is a channel that I go to whenever I've had a tough day and I just want to lean back and laugh, really leaning into that and making sure that you're delivering that every single time is super important. And it's the fastest way to build an audience. I think my favorite creators that we work with, and even creators outside of that, such as, a Mr. Beast, who's absolutely crushing it in the digital space, they maintain that consistency, and you can tell they just get it. It's like a director who's able to shoot, let's say, a 15-hour movie or a 15-hour series, and they're able to sort of hold that thread the entire time, where everything feels like it's 15 hours of content, but everything feels like it has some continuity to it. And I think that's what the best digital creators are doing as well.
Just to add to that, I'm guessing they know their numbers, don't they? You know, I know that some of the top creators, you know, they know about dwell time. They know about what time is working best. All of this sort of stuff that they're really insightful, which always amazes me.
Obsessed. If you ever want to have a difficult conversation with the creator, go to them and say that they need to change their posting time, or they need to change their posting schedule. That's one of the most difficult conversations in all of entertainment, guaranteed.
I'm assuming, though, because their audience are used to seeing uploads that 5 p.m. on a Wednesday or something, then they've positioned it in that way, which I think is brilliant, to be honest. I mean, I wish I was doing that. I tend to just post whenever, but there's no real. And then obviously I'm not a big gaming creator, but there's a lot to be said for it, isn't it, about being consistent. And, you know, it's just the quality as well. The quality of the content has got a lot better and more competitive.
Absolutely. The digital ecosystem, as it gets kind of more advanced, if you will, people know where they go for a very specific effect. And then content creators also know which platforms give them very specific effects. And so if you're on YouTube, you have to have something to say. You need some production quality in terms of the way you edit and the pace and, you know, how you open and how you close and what your middle segment is. And you really need to think as a, you know, almost as a programming exec would, or as a television exec would, in terms of really structuring a really tight 20 minutes or 25 minutes of content. If you're on Twitch, which is a live platform, you may have a runtime of 3 hours, 3 hours live, and you really need to know how you're going to fill that space throughout over the course of 3 hours. And then you get to more of the sort of bite size, a TikTok or even Instagram, where there's a format of, hey, I know I'm going to have someone's attention for 5 seconds, 10 seconds. What do I do? How do I fill it? And so the sort of best creators know across those platforms, they know how they need to structure their content and the value that they need to put in their content to really kind of win on those platforms.
I was going to say, and also the ads or the partnerships have got to feel that they're weaved in as opposed to disrupt, because we know that a lot of Gen Z and millennials hate traditional advertising. It's the corporate big brands they don't like, do they? So it's trying to find, and that's why I think entertainment and comedy can work really well for brands, can't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical to just know and understand the way in. You know, I think especially Gen Z and millennials, it's really a love-hate with advertising. When done well and the brand feels appropriate and feels like belongs in the space, and you know, maybe the ad is next to a creator endorsement, there's a much higher level of tolerance for that sort of thing, especially if you're getting the content for free. There's almost like there's an acceptance of, I know there needs to be some sort of value exchange with this creator. So I'm either going to endure an ad or, you know, sort of enjoy this ad. I'm going to just tip this creator and send them money via Patreon or another platform where I'm going to pay them directly, but kind of when I feel like it. In certain instances, I'm going to participate in their merchandising program, or I'm going to support some other initiative that they say is really important to them. So I think they're not, you know, Gen Z millennial, they're not adverse to the exchange of value. What they are adverse to is sort of being interrupted in a way that's, you know, that feels discontinuous.
You mentioned merch a few minutes ago. It's an area that I'm very familiar with. How much of these gamers are now not just brand partnerships, but whether they be memberships or merch or other books or anything, how much has that grown in the last year or so?
It's been massive. Our company, we stand up merchandise next to kind of our agency and our studio IP business. All three of those are sort of legs of the stool. And each of them are about sort of a third of our revenue makeup. And just to sort of put some context around that, from a publishing standpoint, we've sold over 15 million books. We have 9 shows in development at Hulu, Netflix, Sony, Snap. I'm just saying those stats to show that, you know, that's a big business for us. Merchandising is right there. And I think what we found is that people, especially Gen Z and millennials, they're very inclined to complete the experience. And so you sort of open up this emotional gap. You know, for us, it's always through content. We open up this emotional gap through 20, 25 minutes of program content. And, you know, they say like, wow, that was really fun. That made me feel good. That was a really, really good use of my time. I want to share in and continue that experience. And that sort of transition or that migration from watching a piece of content to buying a piece of merch is very, very natural for that generation. And I think they see merchandising as an expression of just personal taste and personal affinity. The merch sort of becomes the totems of the sort of cultural zeitgeist. And so just as they're willing to sort of buy into the t-shirt by this sort of big brand, a lot of them increasingly, they'll buy the t-shirt from the big brand sort of secondhand and be just as excited to engage in sort of the merchandising program of their favorite creator. And that's really just an attitudinal behavioral shift where previous generations, if you, the kind of brand meant anything, it meant everything. And you could lead with heritage and you could lead with, you know, sort of provenance and you can lead with sort of fabrication and all of these intricacies. And those were the sort of selling points. Whereas now it's more about how do I connect with you through a content experience? And that's enough. If I feel like this content experience that you've developed, that's enough to sort of put you toe to toe with a big heritage brand, which is shocking. You know, it's a shocking shift that sort of opens up a lot of different kind of infrastructure needs to really kind of service this creator economy that's emerging.
Well, Reg, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. Really enjoyed us and hearing about what's really going on the West Coast. So how can people find out more about you and contact you?
You should go to 3blackdot.com. You can email us at info@3blackdot.com. That's our general mailbox. We will return. And, you know, I think in general, we are crafting these entertainment experiences with the goal of always creating a lasting impression on the consumer and audience. And we really enjoy partnering and working with brands and showing you the way in to Gen Z and millennial audiences that are otherwise very, very difficult to reach.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, gordon@gordonglenister.com, or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. If you're able to give us a 5-star review, we would really appreciate that. If you want help in creating an influencer marketing strategy, or you'd like to join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event, please head over to my website, www.gordonglenister.com. Thanks as always to my producer Neil Whiteside from Freedom One, and until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.